Okay, you're tuned to WHPK 88.5 FM in Chicago. You are now listening to the Sitting in the Park show. My name is Bob, and today we have a special interview with members of the Versalettes, actually all of whom came up to the studio just for the interview. So you should definitely keep tuned for the show, as we'll be talking about their history and playing their records. So would you ladies like to introduce yourselves?
Sure.
Viola Floyd.
Kathy Robinson.
Theresa Franks.
Vera Wallace.
Okay, well, first of all, thanks so much for coming up to the studio.
You're welcome.
So, obviously, you are a Chicago group. What part of Chicago are you from?
West Side.
Well, originally, you're from the West Side. We all went to the same high school and grew up on the West Side.
What high school did you go to?
Marshall.
Okay, so did you all live around the same blocks? Like, were you all from...
Yeah.
What part of the West Side are you from?
Around Washtenaw, Wilcox...
California,
Sacramento,
Warren,
and they were like within blocks of each other. So we lived down the street from each other.
Okay, and when did you all meet each other?
Well, we were 6 years old.
Okay. So how did you know each other when you were 6 years old?
Sunday school. Church.
Okay, so you all went to the same church?
Uh-huh.
Except I met Kat when I was in second grade. We went to the same. I wasn't going to the church at the time.
I wasn't either.
And we met Vi, Kat, and I went to the same grammar school, and that's where I met Kat and Vi.
So what church did you go to back then?
Landmark Missionary Baptist Church.
And what was the grammar school that you met at?
We went to grad school. And Theresa
went to Calhoun.
Okay. And when did you start actually singing together? I guess you were friends, and then when you started
in church.
Okay.
Junior choir.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, Teresa's mother was our directress and pianist of the choir.
Junior choir.
Okay, yeah. So you pretty much were singing together at a very young age.
Yeah.
And so how did you get started doing R&B music?
I guess watching people stand on the streets singing, and we were going to the team, you know, like Merrillac House.
Okay.
And they, you know, a lot of talent around there, and Viola was in a group.
What was the name of the group you were in?
The Casanovas.
when was that? Was that in grade school?
Yes.
Okay. And
yeah, I guess we were 12, 13 years old.
and the group you were in, it was you and some boys were in the group?
Guys, we all lived on the same block, except one guy lived around the corner.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how did your group form back in the day? You just were all singing together on the block?
You know, I was thinking about that earlier. I can't remember how we first got together. I guess maybe just by going to Merrillac House, because that's where all the kids in the neighborhood went to Merrillac House after school.
So what?
For teen gatherings.
So what was Merrillac House exactly? It was...
Merrillac House is a daycare center.
Okay.
But we would go for the teen program.
Okay.
In the afternoons, and on Saturdays they had movie day.
Okay.
Popcorn.
And dances at night.
And dances, yeah.
So it's like a neighborhood club.
Yeah.
So and so you were one of the first people in the group who started singing sort of secular music in a group of Casanovas. And then how did the other group members come together with you to become the Versalettes?
Well,
yeah, go on there.
I think we went to Marshall High School, and we went to the first jamboree when we were freshmen.
And that's the talent show there.
And that's the talent show. And since we sang together in the choir... And I think we were we in 4-H Club by that time?
It was after Vi's group won the contest for Lundy Dundee.
Okay.
And then we sort of figured we'll pool Vi with us. We're singing in church anyway.
So what's the contest you just made reference to? What happened?
It was called the
4-H Club had
the 4-H Club
Camp-a-rama or something like that.
Club-a-rama it was called. Yeah.
So your group, the Casanovas, were in the Club-a-rama contest at the 4-H Club.
And we went to Springfield to the big fair, and that's where we sang.
And that was before you were even in high school?
Yes.
Okay.
Before we went to high school. Yeah, we sang in 8th grade.
And then after the first jamboree, we got together and we decided that we could do this. We could form a group. And I don't remember what happened. I think
Bobby
came.
We like the way we sang at church because mm-hmm. okay. we all harmonized with one another so well. As a matter of fact, we were the backbone of the choir, really.
Okay.
Yeah, because we would help the other people with their parts.
Plus, we sung with Mr. Fields.
Right.
Who was that?
He was our church organist, and he was also my piano teacher.
Okay.
And he sort of pulled the four of us and started a group.
You know, he encouraged you to start a group.
Right, we did mostly classical with him. We didn't do, you know, we did classical music with him.
And this is before you were even in high school, you started doing this?
Yeah, it was right before high school.
Okay.
And then all through high school.
Then all through high school.
So, when did you decide to start singing, I guess, R&B music together then?
You know, it was during, well, we had thought about it before, probably, but after that jamboree.
Yeah.
That jamboree
right,
was hook anybody.
Because listen to the different records, like uh-huh. the Marvelettes, was that they were our idols.
Okay.
And Martha and the Vandellas, the Chantel.
Yeah.
And I guess we would get together and sing different songs, and then some kind of way Bobby came into our lives and really organized us.
Who was Bobby?
Heard us.
He was our manager.
What was his last name?
Mason. Bobby Mason.
Okay.
He was also affiliated with the Constellation.
He was one of the Constellation.
So you had talked about the Jamboree inspiring you to form a group and sing. Did you actually perform in that first Jamboree, or you just admired everybody who was performing? And then
we
you...
admired.
Okay.
Because as freshmen, we didn't really know about the Jamboree. And then after that first semester as freshmen, then we auditioned for the second semester.
Okay. Yeah, that's interesting just because so many groups came out of Marshall. They must have created like a culture of that type of music that
right.
inspired you
right.
to do that. So were the Constellations in the Jamboree that you saw?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So you were saying that after you saw the talent show, you were inspired to come together and actually perform or sing R&B music. And you were saying that Bobby Mason of the Constellations became your manager, is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He liked us when he heard us singing.
So you were just singing together like in the lunchroom, pretty
that
much?
That was our spot. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That was our spot. And the Constellations always had people standing around because Zach always had his hand up to his ear, harmonizing, trying to walk down the hall, you know, trying to getting his notes together. So, you know, when you hear these guys singing, we started, you know, kind of migrating toward the area just to see what was going on. And Bobby had heard us sing by that time. But we had not been in the Jamboree. And we would hear the singing, and we wanted to do the same thing.
So were they the biggest group in your school at the time, the Constellations?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there was also a female group at your school. There were the Lovettes and then the Gems
right.
at that time.
Yeah.
Were they about the same age as you, or do you remember them in school?
Maybe
a year older.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and did you like see them at the Jamboree that you saw too? Like, did you want to be like them too, or you had your own different thing?
I don't remember specifically looking at them and saying, you know, I think it was just a whole show itself.
There was just so many people in the school.
Yeah, and it was like a real show. I mean, it was like going to
the Regal or something.
A real production. You know, it was like really a nice production.
So, and there weren't just singers, right? There were other talents too.
Right, there were other talents, and we had dancers. We had very, you know, everyone. The MCs were great. We had just bands to play just instrumentals, and you know, it was good.
So, and then you eventually drifted towards the Constellations, and you said Bobby Mason became your manager.
Right.
And did they mentor you, too? Like, what was the story?
They were really like brothers.
Okay.
And very protective.
And some of the songs we sang, the Constellations, Zach especially, I think, would come to our rehearsals and give us the words, the phrasing, and sing the high notes for us, and we would try to imitate what he was doing. And so
without
they really were
holding our ear.
Really were like big brother mentors for us, and very proud of us.
And another question is: previously, you had all sang together in church.
Mm-hmm.
Did you find that R&B type harmony was very similar, or were you singing, had to sing differently than when you were in church?
Very similar.
It was similar. It was just a different flair.
Okay, so just different types of psalms you're singing.
Mm-hmm.
So you already...
And the church, the training we got in church is why I think we did so well with the harmonies that we did.
Because you already knew how to do it.
Yeah, because we already knew how to do it.
So I want to talk more. So eventually you ended up cutting a bunch of records, and I want to talk more about how that happened, but first... I want to give the listeners an idea of what you sounded like, so I'm going to play your first record, and for some reason, we can talk about this, that they released this under the name The Trinkets. This record is called Fisherman.
There's a boy in this town called the Fisherman. He's got a lot of broken hearts on his string. Got a fancy car for a fishing pole. And he baits his hook with a diamond ring.
Okay, that was just the Versalettes with their very first record called Fisherman that for some reason was released under the name The Trinkets. So if you're just tuning in, I have members, all four members of the Versalettes in the studio right now talking about the story of their group. So where we left off was that you were at Marshall High School singing together finally after seeing the Jamboree singing R&B music. How did you come up with a group name?
Versalettes.
Like who came up with the name?
That was Bobby's inspiration.
Bobby,
again.
Yeah.
And I guess he had he was familiar with the group by the name of the Versatiles.
The Versatiles.
Versatiles.
Yeah. And we were saying we're so versatile. We need to come up with a name like that. And
the Marvelettes was like, you know, our idols, so we just took versatile and put lets. And
that was a common thing for the girl groups to have
right.
the ets at the end.
Right.
So did you start performing in talent shows with the name under the name the Versalettes at that time?
Right. In fact, the first Jamboree we did, it was quite rare to be in two shows. And even as freshmen, our first performance in Jamboree, we were allowed to sing in both shows. They had a morning show and an afternoon show.
So the Jamboree, it wasn't once a year, it was like once a semester or something?
It was once a semester, I thought. Because the first semester we were freshmen. And then the first time we sang in the Jamboree was second semester, we were still freshmen.
Because our semesters were on a year, you know, they were in quarters and not in year. You know, so everything we have like 4A, 4B, it was like, so we didn't sing that first part of our freshman year.
Okay.
We sang the second part of our second part.
But already by your freshman year, you were the Versalettes and you performed in the talent show.
Right.
We always considered ourselves only as the Versalettes.
And in the talent show, what do you remember doing? Because you hadn't recorded a record yet. What songs did you do?
For that first one, we were just thinking about that, talking about that.
Because I thought it was
Come and Get These Memories was the first song we performed. And did we sing two songs or one song?
I think we did the one song, but we just sung in two shows.
Okay. Yeah, that was the very first one.
And did you sing it a cappella at the, or did you have a band, or did the Constellations band play for you?
The Constellations band, because we didn't have Frank and Kenny with us at that time, because this was all new to us.
Okay.
Even though Bobby, you know, had
experience.
We use the Jamboree House, as you would say, the house band.
Okay.
That now that when we really think about it, so that would have been Raynard Minor.
Okay.
And on keyboards, and it would have been Willie Williams on drums.
Okay.
And then I think Elmore was on.
Wasn't Elmore there?
I don't remember the guitarist.
Yeah, I think he was. And so we used their
okay.
for that show.
And they were all students in school with you too, right?
Yeah.
And Renard was with the Lovettes, the Gems,
uh-huh.
And I know he wrote for them and a bunch of other groups he wrote for.
Yeah, very talented. Very talented.
So, and that was all in your first year of school that started happening.
Yeah.
So, what happened throughout? So, first of all, when did you actually record? Were you still in high school when you recorded that record I just played?
Now that record wasn't the first record. The first record was Knight in Shining Armor.
I'm pretty sure that was the first one released, though. It definitely you can tell by the catalog numbers
exactly.
on the record label.
Oh, really?
It definitely got, maybe they didn't promote it or anything, but it got released before.
But Knight in Shining Armor was released while we were in high school.
That was your first hit, probably.
That was, yeah, because see what happens, they recorded us all in one day.
Mm-hmm.
So they could release, that's why they were releasing things under other names, because at that time they could not release more than one record, which Verselettes couldn't be on two entities. That's how it was explained to us. If we never knew they released it as the Trinkets. We always thought everything was released as the Verselettes.
So what happened? Did you so how did you get a record deal? And that was still when you were in high school, right? That record.
Yes.
Do you remember what year in high school you were when you recorded that?
All of that was 1963.
So were you sophomores in school? What year were you in school?
We were sophomores.
Okay, so it was pretty early in your high school that
mm-hmm.
you got a record.
And that was we got the recording deal as a result of a contest we won with the 4-H Club. And we performed at the
Centennial
at McCormick Place. And someone saw us perform.
So you were doing contests not just at your school, but already doing other contests
right.
when you were in
but
high school.
The Jamboree was not a contest.
Yeah, wasn't it?
It was just a show.
It was just a show. You auditioned. If they like you, you were in it. It was not a prize or anything. You just performed.
So how did you end up doing contests? Did Bobby take you around to different contests or shows?
Yeah, Bobby had all kind of connections as far as getting us into quite a few shows, because I don't remember competing too much.
Most
you know.
Of them, we call them gigs.
Yeah.
Somebody
okay.
wanted us to perform.
Okay.
And then after we signed a contract, of course, we could demand union scale, which was always great. And the thing about it, Bobby was only, a year older, but our parents trusted him. He drove a car. And he took us to all of our engagements.
And that was even before you had a record out. You were doing all these shows.
Mm-hmm.
So you said you did a show at the 4-H Club, and somebody saw you, and that's how you got a record deal?
When we were performing at McCormick Place.
Okay.
And it was a local disc jockey.
Who saw you?
And I think Lucky Cordell.
Okay.
Lucky Cordell.
So Lucky saw you, and he helped you get a deal. Did he take you? So the record, we didn't announce what record label it came out on. It came out on a label called Witch Records.
Mm-hmm.
So did you sign a contract with Witch Records?
It was, to us, they told us it was Cortland.
Yeah, Cortland and Witch, there was the same
right, but
label.
They told us Cortland.
Okay.
So that was under the production of Barb Catrine.
Okay. So did Lucky take you to Bob, or did Bobby Mason take you to Bob Catron? Did you sign a contract with him?
You know what? I know. I remember we went to Lucky Cordell's house. Lucky had a pet monkey. That's how I remember that. And After we left, of course, we talked about why does somebody have a pet monkey. But at any rate, some of the stuff, some of the details aren't really clear to us because Bobby
did
was
everything.
Our business manager. He did everything. And I'm assuming that it may have been through Lucky Cordell that we got in touch with Bob Catron.
Because after Lucky Cordell came on board, then Herb Kent, we started doing sock hops and...
After the record came out.
Yeah, because to promote your record.
Right, right.
Lucky doesn't have a monkey anymore, by the way. So you signed a deal with Bob Catron? Is that the person you signed with, or you don't remember?
Portland. It was Catron because he signed the contract.
Now, we were less than 18. We were younger than 18, so our parents had to sign.
Okay, and do you remember where you went to record the record?
The studio is very big. See, Bobby, you got to understand.
You know, I can see the
Bobby
studio.
Bobby used to put us in the car.
Oh, we didn't. Yeah, so he had to worry about that.
Yeah. Okay. We had to do the gig and
get in the car.
So just get in the car, and that's what we would do. We would get in the car, and we always.
I can
back
see the studio, and maybe somewhere near south or something, but I have no idea. You know,
and
old warehouse or something. I remember it was on the second floor, lots of windows. But I don't know, we don't know where it was exactly.
So did you record all your Cortland Witch material in the same session?
Yeah.
No, that was the practice session.
Yeah.
We went to, the actual recording was at, was it a CBS?
CBS, that's what's on my mind.
Yeah, real
CBS.
Nice studio.
Yeah.
So did you record all the Cortland Witch stuff in the same session, pretty much?
Uh-huh.
Well, let me play.
Because some of it, they were telling us, oh, let's hear you girls do this.
Okay.
So we didn't think they were recording. They just told us to do this. So we would do that because when I would hear some of the music later in years that we didn't even know was released, I was like, oh, that's ugly. We were just practicing, but they recorded it.
But the last song definitely it sounded like a studio because there was the monologue and like it didn't sound like a practice session.
No, that one wasn't. But it was always that flip side that we were doing.
Okay,
So
let me play the record that ended up being your hit record when you're on the label. This is the Versalettes with Knight in Shining Armor. Okay, that was just the Versalettes with their biggest hit, Knight in Shining Armor. And if you're just tuning in, we have members of the Versalettes in the studio now talking about their history and their records. So we had just talked about how you all had gone to the studio and pretty much recorded everything that was released on you on that label in one day. So the record I played before and this record, and there's one more record which I'll play if we get a chance. So that song I just played, who was singing lead on the record?
Teresa.
And she sang lead on the other record too?
Mm-hmm.
And she did the monologue on the other record. What and everyone else sang back up pretty much.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So one thing I wanted to ask is, so that became your hit record, is that right? Did it get some play on the radio?
It did.
Okay.
It did, because I think the first time it really hit us was when it was at one of the football games or the basketball, and we were sitting in the gym, and on the loudspeaker, here comes Knight in Shining Armor. We were like, oh, Lord. You know.
Was it your high school basketball?
Yeah, high school.
Okay.
High school. And so then we had a local Mr. Taylor, who owned the record store. And so he took some pictures of us. And
Polaroid pictures
and blew them up and put them on his
in the window of
the record shop.
I think all of our records had sold for Mr. Taylor's record shop on Fifth Avenue. He was one of our biggest supporters.
Where was his store?
On Fifth Avenue.
In Madison.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, and then you started doing record hops to promote that record, too?
Right.
And one thing you were telling me is that the label had, there was a few soul acts on the label, like the Blenders had their hit Daughter on the label, but I think even the black acts that were on the label, they tried to promote them to white audiences.
Right.
So were they trying to do something similar with you?
That's what we think.
Okay.
And I'm not even sure if that's what they wanted to do, but that's the direction we went in. Because we didn't do a lot of performing during that time, except at school. As far as a black audience, our audiences were sock hops that weren't even in our neighborhood. They were schools that weren't in our neighborhood.
And then,
auditorium.
And then another issue, too, we had a problem with the name. We were the Versalettes. That's our identity. That's how our public knew us. And they changed the name to some jammies or something. And we'd let them know, you sound like a bunch of pajamas. And in the African American community, jammies is not hip. It is not cool. That's a cool name. And so if you have a problem with your name, it's kind of like you can get an attitude. So that did not appeal. As far
trinkets
as we're concerned.
We didn't like that one either.
They just made that up and put it on the record,
mm-hmm.
The trinkets.
The little foxes.
Oh, the little foxes.
The little foxes,
the trinkets, and the jammies.
Oh, it was really
but at least they didn't release any records on you as the jammies. So they just tried to promote you as
mm-hmm.
a jammie
yes.
or something?
Yes.
Do you remember some of the schools that you did hops at? Were they the north side or were they in the suburbs even?
We did a show in northern Illinois for Kappa Alpha Psi fraternity.
Yeah.
We've performed at Argo High School. We've been to a place called Belden, Wisconsin.
Was this all while you were still in high school?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
St. Phillips.
St. Phillips, Maryland.
High school was all boys high school at the time.
Okay.
right in our neighborhood.
Okay.
On Jackson and Kedzie.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
that's where Herb Kent would be. That's where he used to have his...
his record hops were there?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And so what was the story? Like, you went to school in the day and did the record hops nights or weekends?
On the weekend.
Weekend.
And we practiced once a week because schoolwork came first.
Right.
And usually I had a little piano at my house, so we would come to my house basically and practice. Then we had choir rehearsal.
Okay.
Okay, so we had to make sure our grades stayed up. We had to make our commitment to the church choir, and then we would practice together. After school,
mm-hmm.
so you kept singing in church at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you were singing all the time, pretty much.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then pretty much every weekend you were doing shows or talent shows, things like that. And was that throughout high school, pretty much?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Well, let me play the final record that you released on Cortland Witch Records. This was called Don Juan in Town. One thing I wanted to ask you, though, is on these records, there was a fifth person singing, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Who was the fifth person singing on the records?
Helen Greenfield.
And how did you know her?
I think we met her through Viola. Viola knew her, and she introduced
right.
us.
In Marshall High School, and she had beautiful
first soprano.
Beautiful first soprano voice.
Okay.
And Bobby said one day, well, we need someone as a backup just in case some of you all get, once somebody gets sick or something happens to your voice, she can come in and fill in because she could do all parts,
okay,
alto and soprano. Excuse me. So that's how we said, well, sure.
Well, it wasn't quite that easy. We had to interview her.
Well,
we had to discuss whether or not, because we had been together since we were 7 and 9 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So we had some issues about that. Not being witches or anything, but we interviewed her, and then we had to vote.
Yeah, we did.
As to whether or not she would be okay.
So, so she was with you. She was with you for how long was she with you?
About a year.
But she ended up being on these
she
records.
She was on all the recordings.
Okay.
She was on all the recordings.
And why did she leave the group?
Well, Helen dropped out of school, high school.
Okay. Was she the same year as you in school?
Yes.
Okay.
And
you were all the same year in school.
Yes.
Okay. So let me play the last record that she recorded on this label. This is called Don Juan in Town. Okay, that was just the Versalettes with their last recording as the Versalettes, called Don Juan in Town. So is the same person singing lead on that record too?
No.
Okay. Who's singing?
Viola.
Okay. And on that record, one thing that's interesting is on which they had put out another record, which I think some of Donald Jenkins' Delighter singing, called Don Juan. So I don't know if that was like an answer record to Don Juan, like, but you don't remember the record I'm talking about, do you? It was a group called the Star Brothers.
No. Mm-hmm.
Did you know Donald Jenkins and the Delighters at all?
They
yes.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
They worked with us before we recorded.
How did they work with you?
They came to our rehearsals. And
they were the writers of the songs that we write in Cheyenne.
They did Don Juan. Didn't they teach us Don Juan?
Yeah, they taught us all of them.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And but pretty much you only knew them in the studio. You didn't know them outside the studio.
Well, they came to Vera's house.
To our rehearsals.
To our rehearsals.
But that's the the relationship was strictly professional and helping to learn the music.
Okay. And you had done some bigger shows at the time, right? You were telling me you did some show for like a senator and Frida Payne was there. What was the story with that?
Well, this is in 1963. It was a Negro 100 years of Negro progress.
Black
and we had
Centennial.
Black Centennial. We had won something at 4-H Club again, and we were on a little stage. We performed 3 days a week. We made $3 an hour, $3 a day, and we did two or three shows, and one day, Frida Payne.
Was that when you were in the summer, outside of school?
It was in the summer.
Okay.
And Frida Payne came to the little 4-H Club stage frequently and just fell in love with us. And some kind of way, we got invited to the big stage.
Right.
She was performing there with Red Saunders,
right.
And
mm-hmm.
so we got asked.
She said we were upstage.
She was so beautiful.
Yes, mm-hmm. She said we were upstaging
such a beautiful woman.
But she invited you there, and then she told you were upstaging her?
Well, yeah, she did. She
yeah.
very, very
But then we started wearing our hair like her, too.
Okay.
Yeah.
And for some reason, I guess Senator Douglas was, there was something
mm-hmm.
he was doing,
mm-hmm.
and they asked us to make up a serenade to sing to him on the big stage.
Was he a state senator?
He was a senator, yes. Uh-huh, yes. State senator. Yes.
And, so, did you also have nice, like, gowns and stuff that you
my
had?
God.
Oh,
no. The history of our uniforms. The first uniform was a black skirt and a white blouse. Then I think we were poor. I think we dyed the blouse.
Yeah, we dyed
it blue. So we had black and blue.
And we dyed our shoes, too.
We used to go to Elmo's and get two pair for $5. And then our next uniform was a little A-line dress, long sleeve, jewel neck with little buttons. And then it got hot. So in the summertime, we tore the sleeves off. And then we got these blue and white plaid skirts with a little bolero jacket with blue and white plaid piping. We wore those.
We made those.
No, we didn't make those.
Yes, we did.
Not those.
In our... Mama's
no, we didn't. Made no, we made those. They were always too long. We had to pull them up with an elastic belt. And then we did so many alterations from the other outfits. And then we got the little pink chiffon things, and we got the maroon things. The first gowns we got were purchased for us by a former high school teacher, John Vanderheiden, because now they were in charge of us. That's when we became the Jammies, and they took us to this exclusive shop downtown,
mm-hmm.
and we got these white cotton eyelet gowns, and then we had them cut off, and we took professional photographs.
Wait,
and those photographs were those that were on the marquee outside of the Studebaker Theater, because Teens for Talent had a big concert, and all the talent from Teens for Talent, and our pictures were there just like a real New York theater.
Okay. So you had done shows with Teens for Talent, too?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And was that through Bobby? He got you involved with them?
It was Bobby.
It was Bobby.
Okay. And what were some other big shows that you did?
The WTTW. It was a television.
Okay.
Teens for Talent did a television broadcast.
Yeah, Bernard was talking about that.
Yeah,
he said it was at the Museum of Science and Industry.
I can't remember where it was.
Okay.
Okay.
We got kicked out of the church choir for that, though.
Yeah, we did.
For a little while.
Yeah.
Until they begged us to come back.
Yeah, we performed, but...
Do you mean they just didn't like you doing secular music?
Right,
exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
And so
but
you...
I have to make a comment about that.
Okay.
When they interviewed us and they said, you know, all you girls in the same grade, we said, yes, you're all the same age, yes, and, you know, we do everything together. And our pastor said, well, they said they did. They were this together, but they didn't all say they went to Landmark Mission Baptist Church.
You mentioned
it. You know, he said we didn't mention
they all
the church.
Went to church. And at the time, we didn't because Helen did not.
She didn't attend.
But we didn't mean any disrespect.
We didn't mean any disrespect. It's just that we didn't.
Just one of your members didn't go to the church.
No,
we just didn't mention the church.
Was not the question he was asking.
Okay. But you managed to offend the guy at the church, even though
I don't think it was the guy, but we don't want to talk too much about that.
Okay. Okay, so you were together throughout high school, is that right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And did you stay together after high school finished? What was the story?
Yeah, we stayed together for a short time after that. I guess until we were about 20 years old. Kat got married early, well, first, and then she started her family pretty soon after that. I was away at school and in Evanston, and Theresa was modeling, and I was working.
School
so everybody's working. I'm in school, and the rehearsals got a little bit too rough. And then one day I was accosted on the train going back to Evanston.
What do you mean the rehearsals got rough?
Because I was in school.
Oh, everyone was too busy.
Yeah, in school, and grades came first. And
where were you in school?
I was at that time I was at Kendall College. It was a private two-year school in Evanston.
Okay.
And I was working also. I was working as a Illinois Bell. So I had school, had work, and then I would travel back to the city. Teresa was modeling and going different places. Vi was busy with her job, and then Kat was starting a family. And it just got a little bit too much.
Yeah, because Teresa was on the road a lot.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And then
Okay.
And with, you know, singing as a group and doing what you want to do together because that's what you want to do is one thing, but then being managed by other people and not having so much of a say in, for instance, your name, you know, and the kinds of music that you're going to sing kind of created a negative vibe. And it just wasn't the same. We still loved
Bobby,
each other.
Bobby
we still cared about each other.
Okay. Oh, so Bobby got drafted.
Bobby got drafted.
Right.
Okay.
To the Marines. So
you didn't have a manager anymore either?
Everybody wanted to manage us. Even when I got married, my husband thought he was supposed to manage us. And I'm like, mm-mm. You know? So one of our high school teachers.
Okay.
Approached us later, and it was John Vanderhyden, and it was like, this is, why are you doing this, Mr. Vanderhyden? We don't, you know, it's not going to work. It's because
there was always a question about.
Know.
So while you were in school, you cut those records early on in your high school career. Did you ever try to get another deal while you were still in school?
I think it was through John Vanderhyden. I can't remember the other guy who worked with him. The guy who was actually the representative of the recording company, went to Detroit.
Irvin was,
we went to Detroit, Michigan, and we cut some demo tapes. I think that's when we met Mike Terry.
That was after you were in school.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But while you were in school, did you try to record anything else, or pretty much just that was...
I think going to... we were under the impression that our trip to Detroit was an attempt to get on that label, some label in Detroit.
So on OK Records is the label that you ended up recording on.
I'm not.
Yeah, but in high school, but while we were in high school, whatever we recorded, that was it.
Okay.
We didn't look for another deal.
Okay.
You know, we just waited for the contract to weigh off, and, you know, we were getting ready to graduate from high school.
Okay.
And so after that, it was, you know, we did other things, like we would do the reunion. We did the first reunion.
The first Marshall reunion.
Right, we did a class reunion. And we just, like I said, our schedule was just so way out. We just didn't.
But
so
the Detroit, you were expecting.
Yeah, but
when
that
we
was
went to Detroit.
We were,
that was after high school.
That was after high school.
So this record that we're talking about now, you ended up cutting a record as the Little Foxes, and it came out on the OK Records label.
Yeah.
So, and that's what you're talking about, going to Detroit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So what's the story? You were out of high school already?
Yeah.
And how did you end up, and had you already sort of broken up, or?
No, we never broke up.
We
broke up shortly. We must have been 20 years old. We graduated when we were 17, 18 years old, and we stayed together. And then we went to Detroit when we were 20. That's when Mr. Vanderhyden and the other guy took us there to...
Dave Kaplowitz.
Dave, okay.
So that Vanderhyden guy was a music teacher at your...
No, he was an English teacher
at your school. And he approached you even though you weren't even in school anymore and was like, I want to... He wanted to either produce you or just help you get a record deal.
Right.
And he said he took you with... Who was the other person?
Dave Kaplowitz.
Okay. And you met him in Chicago or in Detroit?
In Chicago. And they got us tickets the first time we'd ever been on an airplane.
Okay.
And we flew to Detroit.
And did you end up signing a contract, or they just they took you to Detroit specifically to record? Is that right?
Yeah.
So did you end up signing a contract before you went to Detroit?
We did. Yeah.
And did they tell you that they were going to record you under the name The Little Foxes?
Yep.
So they pretty much, they're like, we're going to record you, we're going to take you to Detroit.
We got to Detroit, they gave us the music, they played the music, we rehearsed all day, and then they recorded.
Okay.
And we were there, for a weekend.
Mm-hmm,
and then as far as we know, nothing ever happened with our, with that.
Because I wrote to them to find out what happened.
Okay.
Because I was, you know, the one at home, so... they said, we never released it.
Okay.
And so we just never thought anything else about it.
And it was you know, that was some of the most beautiful.
Yeah, because when Mr. Vanderheiden took us over and I said, if you're going to put us in the studio, we want strings.
Okay.
We want some class to this music.
Okay.
And I can remember walking into that studio and I heard this music and I said, that's so pretty. I had no idea what that was.
And Mike Terry had arranged it.
Oh, yeah.
And you met Mike Terry, who's a famous mm-hmm. sax player that arranged a ton of mm-hmm. Detroit and Chicago music.
Mm-hmm. And you could hear the difference in that.
Yeah, because they sing Vi and the others. And then Vi went to do the vocals.
Okay.
The lead vocals, and then we put that later.
Okay, so you didn't even also record it at
right.
the same time.
Right.
No, we recorded it. She was doing the lead part
with the hardest. So I went a couple of days. So I stayed with my aunt, God rest her soul, and they would go over the song, the lead parts with me.
So you went there to practice at first,
yes.
but when
yes.
you recorded
so when
it,
the girls got there.
Yeah, we
mm-hmm. we could fill in the. The background.
But we were all there to record it.
So
yeah.
you all sang it together at the same
yeah.
time.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So let me play, I think this is actually marked as the B-side, but I like this side a lot. This is Love Was Made to Order.
Oh, yeah.
And then we could talk a little bit more about this record and what happened. So this got released as The Little Foxes, but it's really the Versalettes, and this is Love Was Made to Order. Okay, that was just the Little Foxes, who were really the Versalettes with Love Was Made to Order. And we were just talking to the group about how they had gone to Detroit to record the record. And pretty much you didn't even know it was released.
Right.
So what's this? So you never heard of the name Little Foxes until later, and when you found out it was pressed as Little Foxes?
We found out about Little Foxes when they handed us the contract to sign.
Okay, so it was in your contract, though.
Mm-hmm.
And you were just... But I'm sure you weren't happy with the name.
Absolutely not.
I really wasn't happy.
No,
because
we were not happy.
You know, because I'm a married woman.
Okay.
Getting ready to have my first baby, and you say Little Foxes.
Plus, we thought it was somewhat egotistical.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
we are known for our voices.
And not for...
You know, not for looking I mean, you know, it's kind of, you know, cute, but we're known for our voices.
So that record, and you didn't actually know it was released until, I guess, when, in the 90s or something, you found out it was?
In the 90s.
Okay.
And then Arthur did a book about us. Well, not about us, but about several doo-wop in Chicago, Robert Pruder.
So Robert Pruder told you that the record was released.
Right. And he sent me a copy.
Of
that
a record.
Was the first time I heard it.
So, but you had heard it. So the last time you heard it was pretty much in the studio in Detroit.
Right.
But you were talking about how you were really proud of the production values because it was much more professional sounding than your, and it had strings. Do you remember meeting and working with Mike Terry?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then
he was very patient,
but demanding. And demanding. But that's what
we stayed in that studio. We got there early that morning because we nearly missed our flight, and the limo was late, whatever, and we had to jump over the hangar.
Okay.
And we barely had time to fasten our seatbelts before they were holding the plane for us.
But they had a limo.
Because when I got married, they had the limos for us, you know, so they did everything real big like that. When we signed our contract, we went to a restaurant at the Sheraton and had us sitting there, and people kept saying, oh, they heard the Supremes. No. There are four of us, you know, and we were signing our contracts at the Sheraton, one of the hotels, so they did things real big.
Okay.
You know, real big.
So they did invest money into it. They just messed up and didn't promote it. Or
right.
They just didn't, and
they didn't really know what they were doing. And Dave Kaplan got a promotion. He really was the backbone. He worked with us very, very closely. He was really trying to really get us where he thought we could go because he worked with Sly and the Family Stone.
Okay.
And with Peaches and Herb.
Okay.
And so I think he was really, but he got a big promotion.
Okay.
In between that time, and I told Mr. I said we're gonna get lost in the shuffle.
Mm-hmm.
We're
okay.
gonna get lost, and that's what happened. But they released the Vibrations.
Okay.
And they put their money into more of the Vibrations instead of us because of the name. They knew the audiences, the public.
They had already had hits.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you had another thing that you had told me about earlier was they even invested money in, because there's a sort of famous publicity shot of you as the little foxes,
mm-hmm.
and you're wearing these white dresses,
mm-hmm.
and you said that they'd actually, you had gone to like a special, there's some story behind
it. Vanderheiden, that's when they took us to the
Maurice Seymour
to get the dresses, and that was for the Studebaker Theater. That production or show we did,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. and the
but it was
shot.
Also a publicity shot.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and so what happened after? So maybe I should play the other side of the record because it's a nice side too, and then we can talk more about what happened after that.
Okay.
So this is the intended A side of the record. This is called "So Glad Your Love Don't Change." Okay, you are tuned to WHPK 88.5 FM in Chicago. That was just the Little Foxes, who are really the Versalettes, with their last record called So Glad Your Love Don't Change. And if you're just tuning in, we have all four of the members of that group in the studio talking about their story. So that record that I just played, what happened after that? You went to Detroit, you cut the record, you came back to Chicago, they didn't do anything with it.
Right.
So did the group stay together after that for any period of time? What happened to all the members?
The group as a group, we pretty much decided that we had our experience and we wanted to maintain and hold on to the positive memories.
Okay.
You know, but being shuffled around and being given a name by somebody else was not. And then I couldn't afford to keep going to rehearsal because I had to.
You were at school, right? And mm-hmm. very busy. And everyone wanted to get on with their careers,
right,
and their lives.
Well, we did one concert after that as the Fields, with Mr. Fields, because we did all of the gospel, the classicals.
So, when did you do that concert?
That was, how old was Kim T?
It was a year after we had graduated from high school. It was actually, we did it at our church,
right,
to raise money for a scholarship program for the graduates that came after us.
Okay.
The year after us.
So that was before the Little Foxes record?
I think it was after, wasn't it?
I thought it was after.
So maybe soon after the record,
yeah.
You did that concert. Is that has any of you been involved? Have any of you been involved with music since then?
Oh my goodness! All three of them.
Okay. Is it mainly through your church that you've been singing?
Yes.
Okay.
And I've sang with another group called the Triad Gospel Group.
Okay.
Yes, we were together for many years in Merrill Lack House, where I work.
Did you release any recordings ever?
No.
Okay. And but all many of you, the other members, are also singing in church since then?
Yes.
Not me.
Okay.
I'm doing more community choir.
Okay.
With Gwinnett Choral Guild out of Lawrenceville, Georgia.
Okay.
Yeah.
So when did you move to Georgia?
About 20 years ago, right after Theresa died.
Okay. Yeah. So two of the members live in Georgia now, mm-hmm. and two of the members are still in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to say thanks so much for coming down and telling your story.
And our pleasure.
Thank you. Thanks for asking.
Any last words for the audience? You definitely made some excellent records.
Oh, well, thank you. You know, we just really wished we could have done more, you know, but if everything went well for us. We had a good life. We really did.
Yes.
We had a very good life.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely fans in the UK, especially like the Little Foxes record for some people. That's the one people,
oh,
that's the most collectible one there. Okay, well,